the week of April 18th, 2010, this is Showbiz Sandbox Episode 50, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling-Reich.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Karen Woodward.
And hiding behind the gymnasium where the teachers can't see me, I'm Michael Gillis.
Why are you behind the gymnasium?
I'm behind the gymnasium because it's April 20th, it's 4:20, and I'm celebrating Happy Pot Smoking Day. Why are you yelling?
Because I was at Coachella, and my ears are still ringing.
You have to wear earplugs, Sperling.
Is that what those things were for?
Yes, but your Facebook updates were really funny.
What about my Facebook updates? I was actually tweeting through...
Yeah,
I was texting through actually a text message service. I can't remember the name of it, because there was no connectivity out there in Indio.
It was I heard about that.
And it's like that every year. You'd think that after 11 years, they'd figure out, hey, let's get a few more cows out here and cell towers out here. But no.
Well, Coachella did an iPhone app too, which was just so ironic.
I know. And actually, it was a really good iPhone app. A lot of people were using it. And speaking of 420, Michael, that's one of the things we will be talking about when we discuss Coachella a little later on with Todd Martins from the Los Angeles Times and Lauren Bradshaw from Buzz Sugar. Was basically all the drug use that was taking place on the Empire Polo Field out there in Indio. It was unreal how many people were just...
I watched one of my friends get more and more screwed up because his Facebook post started off quite normal and then they started becoming more and more bizarre.
Well, we'll definitely be talking about the Coachella Music and Arts Festival, which happened this past weekend, and we're going to be talking a little bit about some television shows, which ones should be returning in the fall, and which ones we never want to see again. And, of course, we'll always do Big Deal, Big Whoop, and we're going to end with some inside baseball and tell you what the RIAA and MPAA want to put on your computer. But, as always, we start off with the North American Box Office and Michael Giltz.
Well, it was an exciting weekend in the closest race in a long, long time, back and forth, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, every day. The winner kept switching back and forth. But finally, it looks like the winner is, in fact, Kick-Ass, which grossed $19.8 million in its first weekend, just barely edging out How to Train Your Dragon, which grossed $19.6 million. Kick-Ass is, of course, the film about teenagers who dress up as superheroes, but it is definitely not family fare, while How to Train Your Dragon is indeed family fare. At number three, holding quite well, was Date Night with Steve Carell and Tina Fey, which grossed $16.7 million. It's at about $50 million right now. At number four, pretty weak opening, especially the big names involved, every big black actor in America practically, was in Death at a Funeral with $16.2 million. And at number five was Clash of the Titans, still going strong at $13.3 million, despite being pilloried by critics and 3D enthusiasts everywhere. And 6 through 10 were hold-ons, 3 to 5 million for movies like The Last Song, Tyler Perry's Why Did I Get Married 2, Alice in Wonderland, which is at $325 million in the U.S., Hot Tub Time Machine, still chugging along, and The Bounty Hunter. I personally saw Kick-Ass on Sunday night. On the Monday night, what am I talking about? Did anybody, what did you guys see?
Well, I've seen Kick-Ass. It's actually quite violent, and as someone who, you know, I'm not a prude, but I was still kind of a little shocked at how violent and it was, especially given who was committing the violence.
Kids.
Did you see it, Karen, or did you see anything?
No, I didn't see it. I was going to see Date Night, and then plans changed last minute. But I do know people who saw Kick-Ass who thought it was pretty kick-ass.
Yeah, I kind of liked it. It reminded me of Observe and Report, a movie a year and a half ago, I think it was. That was about a mall cop, and it was literally a comedic version of Taxi Driver. And it was a strange little film that was sort of half bizarrely satirical and half very serious. And you didn't know what was happening. You didn't know what to expect. It kept you off balance. And Kick-Ass was like that. I agree. It was a very bad ad campaign. I think Sperling linked to the LA Times post by Steve Zaitchek, who talked about whether the movie worked or didn't and the problems with it and the misconceptions that it raised or destroyed. And I'd love to get into that. But I have to admit, I had no idea what this movie was like. The ad campaign made it seem like a family-friendly movie about kids who dress up as superheroes. And it's not violent, really, in any Hollywood sense. You know, people get stabbed and hurt, but it's not exactly stunningly gory or anything. Not at all. It just happens to be 11-year-old girls doing a lot of the killing.
But it was rated R.
It was rated R. It was totally for adults.
They weren't pretending they were a family film.
No, but the ad campaign was so vague and stupid, it didn't let you know what kind of movie it was. Steve Zaitchek compared the ad campaign to some movies like Paranormal Activities, where they sort of withhold a lot of information. But in that case, they're telling you this is a movie where the less you know, the better. But that's not the case with Kick-Ass. In Kick-Ass, they just didn't tell you what kind of movie it was. I didn't know from the ads that it was this hardcore R-rated film. I had no idea until I suddenly started hearing, people talking about it on Friday and Saturday. And it was interesting. It didn't work completely, but I was always rooting for it. It was always really interesting. And Nicolas Cage is fun. He does a riff on the TV Batman in his role as Big Daddy. And it was a weird, interesting, good movie.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I guess I was a little guilty enjoying that film. I felt like, should I really be laughing at this? Somebody just got their head blown off by an 11-year-old.
That's hilarious.
I think that's wonderful.
Now we should say that, Michael, you are in a gym, and so your audio quality is kind of in and out, and your connectivity is a little shaky. So that's the reason for the Michael's audio quality.
Sorry about that. I'm on the road, and it's never easy to find a good audio. Right now, I'm at an Atlanta bread company in their conference room.
Thus is the life of a working entertainment journalist.
Yeah, Steve Zaitchek said a number of things about the movie. He lists some perceptions about what the movie would prove or disprove and whether they were true or not. My main beef is that no one movie proves or disproves anything. Because this movie failed, it does not mean people don't want to see edgy reappraisals of superheroes. Doesn't mean that at all. It just means this particular film was or wasn't marketed well. And of course, the story is out yet on the film. It does have a weird fan base. It's sure to be a cult favorite. How it does in the next few weekends, I don't know. 19 million is not bad for a movie with mostly no names. Nicolas Cage is in the supporting role, but 19 million is the number one movie in the box office. It's going to get steamrolled in 2 weeks by Iron Man and stuff. But if it makes 50 million, well, that's not bad.
I mean, I don't see how you can call this movie a failure. I mean, this movie came to Comic-Con with no studio backing. A movie cost, a buck 50 to make, and it comes out at number one. And just because it didn't crack 20 million or didn't make 100 million, to me, this movie is a success.
Well, I think a lot of people felt it was tracking to do about $30 million and to thoroughly thrash How to Train Your Dragon, and that is not the case. While more people did see Kick-Ass over the weekend, because of course it didn't have the 3D ticket sale boost that How to Train Your Dragon did, it still didn't make the $30 million everybody thought it would make. And Steve Zaitchek, as you pointed out, Michael, in the Los Angeles Times, did say the title of his article, or the headline, was "Why Kick-Ass Failed, and Did It Really?" And he's saying the same thing, that over the long run, it's not a failure. It will probably pick up in later weeks. And he was, just kind of laying out some points that disproved some of the misconceptions that we all have, including internet buzz means robust ticket sales. He explained why that's not always the case.
Yeah, but I think Karen's absolutely right. Because people said, "I bet it'll make 50 million opening weekend." When it doesn't, they say, "Oh, it's a failure." But that totally distorts, your predictions have nothing to do with actual success or failure. What did the movie cost, and what did it ultimately gross? Those are the only two numbers that matter. People pay way too much attention to opening weekend, just like we do every week.
That's right. We are a part of the problem.
But no, we always put it in perspective, just like we did with How to Train Your Dragon. We said, look, this is a good opening, and it's got great reviews, and people like it, and it can easily chug along and be a big success. And that's exactly what happened to it. And even like Clash of the Titans, people said, "Oh, it's falling fast." You know what? It's at 132 million U.S. It's bopping along. You know what? No matter how much critics hated it, the movie's doing pretty well. I'm sure it'll make more money overseas. So that movie may be a critical flop, but it looks like it's going to be a success too.
Well, speaking of successes, Coachella was seen as a success. The music and arts festival held annually in Indio, California, in the low desert, as they call it. I was there, and we should maybe get Todd Martin and Lauren Bradshaw on. Lauren is from Buzz Sugar, where she's an editor, and Todd Martin is one of the co-editors of the Pop and Hiss blog, which is an absolutely phenomenal blog. It covers everything having to do with music. You should really check into it. Let's get them on the line. Uh-oh. Hello, Todd? Hi, this is Sperling, and I've got Karen and Michael, Karen Woodward and Michael Giltz, our two co-hosts.
Excellent. Hi, guys.
I'm trying to get Lauren from Buzz Sugar, and we'll try to continue getting her during the interview, but it looks like her internet connection isn't working and we're having trouble with the Skype connection. But Todd, thank you for joining us. We wanted to talk to you about Coachella, which you spent the entire weekend at, as did I. What did you think overall of this year's festival?
Well, this is the 10th Coachella I've gone to, I've covered. And, you know, the first thing that jumped out at my, just jumped out at me was just, you know, the increase in size. I mean, you know, about 15,000 more people attended this year's event than last year's event. And, you know, definitely trying to expand it beyond just music and trying to give people stuff to do, you know, throughout the day, you know, the addition of a Ferris wheel and more VIP areas and really turn it into sort of like a 3-day almost, you know, vacation spot more so than just, you know, something where someone goes down there for a day and takes in a bunch of bands. You know, they only sold 3-day passes this year. So my first impression was just the crowd.
Did they handle the crowd well? Is it too big or is it the right size?
You know, I found it a little easier to navigate last year, but, you know, in talking to fans, you know, Friday was the most problematic day. We interviewed a lot of people who said they were in line for, you know, two hours or more. A couple people I talked to said it took them almost 2 hours to get from the freeway to the venue site. It's only about 3 or 4 miles. And I also talked to somebody who actually paid somebody $40 to, you know, cut in line to, I'll give you $40 to stand next to you.
That's not very Burning Man.
Yeah, and I have to say, that is very true. You know, because I've been to Coachella so many times, I knew some back roads and came in a different route because I had sat in the past in that 3 or 4 mile line of cars for upwards of 3 hours. And it is incredibly frustrating, especially when you're sitting there in the heat of the desert. But then after finding a parking space, after a 2 hour wait, to then wait for an hour, hour and a half, just to get a wristband was maddening. Yeah. It that part definitely didn't work. And I can tell you from my vantage point, at 60,000 people, there were a lot of people on that polo field, but it was manageable. But putting 75,000 people, and that's just the paid tickets, it was completely unmanageable. And acts like Tom York and MGMT and Passion Pit, you were literally being squished if you tried to get close to the stage or even close to the sound booth. It was,
yeah, what is it like? Because I'm picturing like Woodstock, mud and naked people.
Well, it's a very, I mean, in terms of massive festivals, I've always found Coachella to be relatively clean. You know, it doesn't really rain, so there's not a ton of mud. But I found this year for the first time I had to, you know, if I really wanted to see somebody, like I really wanted to see, you know, Charlotte Gainsbourg, the French singer, and I had to get to the, she was performing in a tent, so I actually got there for the performer before her, just to make sure I was inside the tent, and, you know, I've never had to do that before at Coachella. I've always just been able to, you know, go in and out, with an exception here or there, but, you know, you've always been able to get close to who you were trying to see.
That I agree with, and that was kind of nice about that festival, that, yeah, if it was a popular act and you were late to the game, that, yeah, you might be, you know, as far back as the sound booth, maybe a little further, especially if it was the main stage, but you could kind of get somewhat close. This year, you had to wait all day to get close to MGMT. There was no way you were getting close to them if you showed up 15 minutes before their act started.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I showed up you know, for the act before, I think, I'm trying to remember who it was. But I will say, though, if you did want to see MGMT, a lot of the crowd, you know, did weave a few songs in there, so they probably could have moved up a little
once,
bit.
Once they didn't play Kids.
I love their new stuff. But yeah, they didn't play Kids, and I love their new record. I love their show, but it definitely wasn't, you know, festival ready.
Well, we love them because we play what we like to consider a fair use snippet of their music at the beginning and end of our show. So we always talk about them on tour. Have you done the European festivals? Because, of course, festivals have been the way to go in Europe for decades now, and U.S. seems to be sort of catching up. Are they really sort of becoming entrenched the way the European fests are?
I mean, Coachella is really modeled after, you know, the big European festivals. And, you know, I haven't done the European fest. I've only done, you know, Coachella and Lollapalooza and, you know, just a number of the American ones. But in terms of, you know, size and, you know, the big European fest, they'll bring in, you know, 90,000 people. And, you know, Bonnaroo on its, you know, at its height has brought in about 90,000 people. I think they're closer to 80 or 85 this year. And that's still the biggest in America. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely the European model of, you know, bigger is better, and it has to be, you know, 70, 80,000 people to, you know, be a success.
Do you think that they will kind of cut it off at 60,000 people for next year, or is 75,000 the new 60,000?
You know, I'm not really sure. I haven't had a chance to talk to Golden Voice since I got back. So, I don't want to speculate on what they're going to do. I mean, they definitely made some changes day to day. I noticed getting in was a little bit tighter on Saturday, was a little bit faster on Saturday. The press areas, and it's in one of the VIP areas. And on Friday, there were a lot of people jumping that gate to get into the VIP area. And, you know, they made adjustments to, prevent that from happening as much on Saturday. So, I think Golden Voice is definitely, is paying attention to what fans are saying, and, we're going to ask them about it. And, you know, they've made adjustments in the past. It's a well-run event, so I'll be curious to see if they're going to cap it, or just in terms of, I mean, there's a lot of space too that, you know, they added VIP space, and, you know, they could just make the festival bigger and cut back some of that. So, I mean, there's some options for them.
Well, Todd, I didn't get to go to the festival, but I was reading your blog during the entire time on Pop and Hiss at the LA Times, and we've linked to some of the stories. I love your story about the hidden costs for artists and how some smaller acts can actually lose money, but the visibility is so good, they pay the extra expenses just to get to Coachella and perform there. But tell us about your love for Charlotte Gainsbourg and waiting in line to get an autograph for her, because so many times critics and movie people in the entertainment business just don't want to talk about the fact that they really like an act. And I appreciate the fact that you were upfront about it.
Well, I mean, that was kind of weird. And I was kind of, wondering about doing that. I grew up a huge Clash fan. They were my first love. And, I probably wouldn't have even asked Mick Jones for an autograph who was performing with the Gorillaz. And I think it was just sort of, I happened to be at the record store at the time. And I was interviewing them, the people running. They have a little pop-up record store at Coachella. I was interviewing the people behind that. And, they were telling me about the autograph sessions, and Charlotte Gainsbourg was next, and the line for her was really small, and I think her music is wonderful. I think her acting is wonderful, and kind of a geek for some French pop and Serge Gainsbourg, and maybe that she's not necessarily an American icon per se. She's a little bit more exotic, or I don't know. I just felt it would be a nice thing to have for the. An autographed a piece of vinyl from her. She's almost like royalty in a way in the art world. So I just figured I'd take advantage of the whole festival experience and get a chance to meet her and talk to her for a minute and get a nice framed piece of vinyl.
Was she nice?
Oh, she was super nice. she seemed a little overwhelmed by the whole experience.
Joining us now is Lauren Bradshaw from Buzz Sugar. Now, you're the co-editor at Buzz Sugar, correct?
That's correct. There's actually three of us on staff.
And you were out in Indio, like myself, and Todd Martins, who's on the line right now with us. You were out there all weekend at Coachella. What did you think?
Well, I thought the performances were really amazing. I enjoyed a lot of the music. The festival itself, though, was a little bit of a mess, just with the crowds and the traffic. But once I was able to get past all of that, I had a really good time.
And now, Todd, do you cover Bonnaroo?
I have not covered Bonnaroo. I haven't done that one.
Because, you mentioned that 90,000 people attend that festival at its height, and it's known as kind of a packed, crowded, sweaty festival, and that's kind of what Coachella has become. It's been around now, as you mentioned, 11 years. This is the 10th version of the festival, and it changes over time. But what's really changed is it's really become a venue to launch certain careers. I think MGMT played there. I saw them there 3 years ago, and it, I think, helped, boost their career. And you point that out in your piece.
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten to the point where, sort of younger acts, I mean, this year you had a band in Playbells. They don't even have a record out. And, they had a pretty packed tent for Coachella. And there's so much media there and, so much attention that, a performance, it resonates beyond just, a club show. And a lot of people... If you play a fest like Coachella or Bonnaroo or Lollapalooza, you can't play in that city for, 3-4 months before that. So it does cut you out of the club market, but at the same time, you're suddenly playing in front of 20,000, 30,000 people.
Okay, you were all there, and I'm very jealous. So let's very quickly go through the three of you, Lauren and Sperling and Todd. What were your two or three favorite performances at the Coachella? Lauren?
Well, first, I would have to say Jay-Z, just because I think, obviously, the big surprise with Beyonce surprised the entire audience. But just the fact that the guy put on this crazy show, went on for like an hour and a half, he was losing his voice, and he just kept going through it. So I think the crowd went nuts for that, and I especially enjoyed it. I think my second favorite would have to be Muse. Just because I'd actually never seen them live before, obviously enjoyed their music, but it was just a really energetic show, and I think probably the highlight, at least, of Saturday.
What about you, Todd?
My highlight was first and foremost the Gorillaz. I thought the way they mixed the styles and genres was pretty seamless, and to be able to see Nick and Paul from the Clash playing with them, that was kind of a rare treat. The two of them aren't on stage together often anymore. And, Damon Albarn was sort of the guy who runs the Gorillaz and Blur, was sort of acting as like this composer. And, he had a whole string section and orchestra with him. And I thought it was a really great performance. And then beyond that, I loved MGMT. I think their new stuff is really off the wall and kind of zany. And I like the fact that they didn't play kids, and they're kind of challenging their audience. And then Shelley Gainsbourg, a huge fan of hers, and it's just nice to finally see her.
Todd, if this keeps up, we may actually be thinking of Blur as the band before Gorillaz. I mean, if he keeps up with the level of quality on these albums, they may become the footnote.
You mean Blur would become the footnote?
Well, Blur was a pretty influential British pop band, and I know they just released a new single, but. Yeah, I mean, I think the Gorillaz, this new record is, it grows on me with each listen. There's a new sound I discover, a new, just something I never noticed each time, or each time I spin that.
Well, I would have to agree with you. Gorillaz was really outstanding and very tight, as was Vampire Weekend. I saw them there 2 years ago in Coachella, and they were just kind of getting their feet wet, and now they're kind of an established, well-honed act. Loved Hot Chip, which is a poptronica band, I guess. I don't know what you would call that kind of music. Now, Lauren, what were you looking forward to when you were going out to Coachella, and did it live up to your expectations?
Oh, gosh. I think it definitely lived up. One of the big things I was looking forward to was Florence and the Machine, just because this was her first U.S. festival. And I just kind of wanted to see her live because I'm a big fan of her album. And she put on a really good show. And actually, I feel like her tent was so full, she could probably use a bigger venue, as with a lot of these acts at Coachella. A lot of them, I felt like, could have moved to a bigger venue because it was so packed.
Well, I think a part of that is the fact that they let in 75,000 people.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a little, it was crowded enough to be a little uncomfortable. And something I noticed this year, and Todd, having been there before, maybe you can speak to this, was the blatant use of drugs. Now, certainly I'm not making any moral judgments or any, ethical judgments.
Really, happy 420, everybody, by the way.
Yes. Really what I'm saying is, in years past, it was kind of a hidden thing that everybody knew everybody was doing drugs, but nobody would talk about it. But here, people were just lighting up joints and popping pills, and you had Andrew Van Weingarten asking people, who's on drugs here, during the MGMT set. Did you notice that as well?
I had to interview, campers and people who were there for the times, and I was talking to these two campers and, this couple, and I asked them how the festival was going for them and, the biggest regret or whatnot, and, and they said that the thing that they were most upset about is that they didn't load up their car with illegal substances because they were so scared it was going to be searched. And they said they got there and it wasn't searched at all. And they were like, we could have got anything we wanted into this venue. So, it's definitely noticeable.
Yes. And their idea of searching was kind of looking at you sideways and then letting you pass by them. It was not, there was this long line that took hours to get through, and then they just kind of looked at you and that was it.
If you look suspicious, they'll get you.
I guess so.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I did find it ironic that, with all of the crazy lines and searches that they had to get into the festival, so many people did get in with weed, and it wasn't, it was everywhere and no one really seemed to care about it.
Lauren, did you see Thom Yorke? Was that something you were interested in seeing?
I caught the very end of Thom Yorke. I actually had the opportunity to talk with Katy Perry for a little bit. She was in the VIP area of the festival. So I passed up the beginning of Thom Yorke for Katy Perry, which I don't actually regret. She was incredibly nice. But I was a little upset to miss the beginning of Thom Yorke, but I did see the end of his set.
Well, certainly I would agree with you, Todd. At the MGMT set, the song Electric Feel was one of the highlights of, at least for me, the festival, because it really did seem like that moment just, there were 50,000 people in the same moment at that time. And of course, that's one of their big hits.
I would absolutely agree with that as well. That was a huge moment. And I actually had two guys in front of me with laser lights doing their own little light show. So I got a little added bonus.
Of course, this year, some of the acts couldn't make it because of the Icelandic volcano. I will not try to pronounce the name of that volcano because I don't think anybody from the U.S. probably can pronounce the name of it.
Human being.
Yeah. But I guess the Cribs and Frightened Rabbit didn't make it, as well as the Ravenettes band and Phoenix's lighting crew didn't make it. Phoenix was another good act. But now, covering a festival like this, do they make it conducive to covering the festival for members of the press?
I mean, it's a challenge, you know. It's I mean, it was difficult getting information on who was or wasn't, you know, going to be able to make it due to the volcano. So I imagine there was some confusion among fans. You know, people were still running over to, you know, the Cribs stage and the Frightened Rabbit stage to see if there was going to be a replacement act or not, and or even if the band had come in, because they didn't really announce that information. And I had a hard time getting it out of, say, you know, the festival reps. I actually just had to start going through straight to the artist folks you know, Frightened Rabbit. You know, when Frightened Rabbit told me they weren't going to be able to make it, and, you know, the Coachella folks were still telling me they didn't know. And so, yeah, it was a little tough getting that information out there.
What about you, Lauren? How did you... What did you think of covering the festival?
It was interesting. I didn't go as a member of the press. I went as just a regular ticket holder and sort of, you know, weaved my way through the crowds. But I think it was a good experience. It was just, like you said, a moment like Electric Feel or something like that. You just really feel like you're in the mix as everyone's sort of going crazy and wild. But I did feel like the festival was a little disorganized. You know, I'm not going to knock the volunteers because it was great that they did it, but a lot of people didn't seem to know what was going on. And like he mentioned with, you know, not knowing if the band was going to be on a certain stage and just this confusion about where to go and what to do. I think it could have been a lot smoother than it was.
I think we say that at the end of every Coachella.
Yeah.
Now, the people standing on the sides of the stage, is that a VIP area?
On the main stage, I don't believe it is. I believe some of the tents, they do have a VIP area to the side of the stage in the tents. But on the main stage, in the outdoor stage, that's generally crew and band friends and famous people.
And so as a member of the press, they're not saying, yeah, we saved a spot for you here at Charlotte Gainsbourg, don't worry.
No, as a member of the, I did not have any sort of access like that. I had to fight my way through. I gave up trying to see LaRue, for instance. I just, you know, there was no way to get into that tent, so I just figured I would navigate somewhere else.
Yeah, same here. You kind of just have to give up actually being able to see the band sometimes and just be willing to just listen to them.
Yes, that is true. Well, you know, at 5'8", I can tell you, seeing the bands is never really an option when you're standing amidst 30,000 people. Now, kind of in closing, Lauren, as a first-timer, would you go again?
It's funny because my associate who went with me, we were just discussing this yesterday. I think I would, because I feel like now that I sort of know what to expect, I could hopefully better navigate it. I would just hope that next year, maybe somehow they would not open it up to even more people, because it just felt like, you know, maybe they should cut back and be a little more restrictive, as much as I hate to say that, because I do think it should be open to everybody.
And do you think that 3-day passes versus single day tickets, what's your feeling on that?
See, that's a tough one, because part of me feels like a 3-day pass is a great idea just because there is such a variety of music. You want to experience it all. But for someone who's like, there were so many young people at the festival who were probably in college and maybe some still in high school who can only afford one day, I think it'd be nice to have that option for them.
What about you, Todd? Where do you stand on that?
In terms of the 3-day versus the single day?
Yeah.
You know, I was surprised that, you know, when they sold out this year and, because they were moving to the 3-day passes only. And, you know, if people are willing to pay, you know, $300+ for a 3-day pass, then I don't see them, you know, moving away from the single-day tickets. I think, you know, I think one of the things they're also trying to avoid is, and maybe just a little bit of speculation on my part, but from talking to local police, they said over the last couple of years there's been more people going down there without tickets, and so I think they're maybe trying to do away with sort of people going down there to buy a walk-up and stuff like that. So they're trying to make it more of a, just an experience, it's either all or nothing.
But Todd, what do you think year after year makes Coachella so special? In 2009, there was a question over whether this would be the last festival due to the economic recession. And now it's been extended. They just took out a lease for the next 10 years. What makes Coachella so special?
Well, I think, Coachella has the benefit of it being, pretty much the first major U.S. festival. So it's got, the branding behind it. And, it's also, got, setting. People love to go to the desert, and there's something that's kind of, even with that mix of people, there are times that, Coachella is a really beautiful place. When you're seeing an act about 4 or 5, 6 p.m. and the sun's going down, and, suddenly, you can be frustrated all day with crowds, and then suddenly everything just kind of seems perfect at that moment. So, I think people, when they look back, they remember that, and, they remember, they remember those kind of good sort of surreal moments that you can only get at a festival, and the fact that you can just see, so many different acts and so many a mix of mainstream and underground sort of stuff that Coachella does curation pretty well in terms of, indie buzz acts and electronic acts, and so I think that it has those things going for it.
Well, certainly, thank you both for joining us, Lauren. I tried to find some coverage of yours on Buzz Sugar. I found one or two pieces. We will definitely place links to them in the show notes, and we've already placed links to your work, Todd, in the show notes. But why don't you're both on Skype. Do you want to tell us what your Skype handles or usernames are so that we can let our listeners follow you?
Twitter,
you mean Twitter.
Sorry, not Skype. Twitter.
Twitter, yeah, I was going to say. Our Twitter handle is HeyBuzzSugar, just like it sounds.
Okay, and what about you, Todd?
I'm just my regular old name. It's Todd Martin, TODDMARTENS, like choose.
Right, and of course you can be found on the Pop and Hiss blog. As I mentioned earlier, it is definitely a blog you want to check out. Thank you both very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks a lot.
Right, cheers.
Well, I personally appreciate both Todd and Lauren being here. Michael, what would you, you said you were jealous. You want to head out there sometime?
I don't like festivals. I don't like the idea. I don't even like big stadium shows. I'm so old now. I just want to see people in small clubs. Even if Madison Square Garden is too big for me. So I don't know. I appreciate the fact that in your tweets, you highlighted Mayor Hawthorne and said how much you liked it, because that's one of my favorite discoveries of 2009.
Well, Michael, might not like big crowds at festivals or at rock concerts, but in all likelihood, you're going to be seeing more and more of these events, because it's the only way artists can make money these days.
Well, it's a good way to make money if you're one of the big acts. If you're a smaller act, you might lose money, but you gain a bigger audience.
Right. Let's talk about TV.
Well, okay then. Karen, would you like to talk about television?
Let's talk about TV.
I use the word audience as a little nugget.
Having said that, Karen, you wanted to move on to television, so let's do that. We're going to talk about which television shows deserve to return this fall. So,
okay.
I know
one of my favorite topics.
I know Karen is chomping at the bit.
So,
here. so Karen, I'm going to turn it over to you, and you can tell us which shows should be here.
Well, I'm not going to go over every single show. I mean, there are definitely shows that we know are going to be renewed or are almost going to be renewed. Shows like Cougar Town and Big Bang Theory and the CSIs. They're all extremely safe.
Modern Family.
It was just announced. Yeah, it was just announced about a couple of hours ago that Parenthood was just renewed. Yay!
That's right.
Do you like Parenthood? I've heard people. I had some friends who said they felt it was getting better the last few weeks and funnier.
It's a drama. It's not meant to be funny. It's
entertaining.
Families. I love the show. It's a very honest depiction, or honest for TV depiction of families and how they interact, and you just grow to really love these characters and feel like I know them, like they're my family. I know that's really cheesy, but it's an enjoyable show. I think you would like it.
I've watched it twice and it really hasn't hooked me yet.
Same thing for me. I'll give it another shot.
Yeah, give it a shot. And then there are some that are gone or nearly gone, which good riddance to most of these. I think that none of us are going to miss Ugly Betty, Numbers, Three Rivers. I was sort of surprised that, I guess I wasn't surprised. I was disappointed that ABC is not going to renew Better Off Ted. I don't think that's definite, but I'm pretty sure they're not. Have either one of you guys ever seen Better Off Ted?
I have not.
If I have, I don't remember it.
Oh, my God. It's the one with Portia de Rossi. This really screwed up office of people who are just so incredibly self-involved.
Wow, I almost always sample every show. I don't even remember that.
Oh, you should try it. It's got you have to be able to find it somewhere. Dollhouse, I never got into, so I'm not particularly surprised about that. Did you guys ever see Dollhouse?
No.
I know people that got into it, but that's the world of Joss Whedon, shows that last for a season or two and disappear, and people love them.
And we'll be talking about Joss Whedon in just a few minutes. Stay tuned.
I'm disappointed that Mercy's probably not going to be picked up. That was one of our... Remember when we did Hiatus or Back Nine?
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, Mercy hung on just that much longer, and now it doesn't look like it's going to. I mean, it's a bad show, but I thoroughly enjoy it. Either one of you guys ever watch it?
No.
No. And NBC already canceled Southland. That went to TNT. They did a few new episodes, or I should say they burned off the episodes NBC didn't air. And I'm sorry that they're probably not going to renew it either, because it was quality. NBC is so desperate for shows that I can't even believe it. It's just amazing how few shows they have. But when I look, USA Today, we linked to with a story. They have shows on the bubble. I'm not watching a single show that's on the bubble on any network. Maybe V, I would be happy to give another shot to. But and I'm sure Law and Order will be back. But basically, none of them am I watching. And in fact, when I look at the list of shows on network TV, I'm only watching one on each network. On ABC, I watch Cougar Town. On CBS, I watch How I Met Your Mother. On Fox, I watch Glee. And on NBC, I watch The Office. All my favorite shows are on cable and pay cable.
Okay, I clearly watch way too much TV. I can say that I have seen every single one of these shows at least once. Every single one.
No, I've seen them. I've seen almost all of them at least once, but I don't watch them regularly.
No, I don't watch them regularly either. I'd like to see Life Unexpected on the CW survive.
Mm-hmm. Have you watched Human Target? That's the only one I haven't watched that I'd like to.
You know, I saw part of the pilot and I was actually sort of bored, but I do think that Mark Valley is, I think he's
fine actor.
And he's been in search of a show for a long time.
All my favorite shows are on TiVo.
Yeah, funny. Nice. Mine are too.
Well, I'm surprised that you have on the bubble here, you have a few shows listed out. Fox's Lie to Me and Human Target. CBS, like every show on the network is on the bubble.
ABC. This is according to USA Today.
Yeah, okay, it's according to USA Today. And ABC, Flash Forward, and V. Those are my, like, I like both those shows.
Flash Forward is dead. That probably almost
They're both awful shows.
Oh, really? Okay, well, I haven't watched.
But V has a better chance, in my opinion, of returning.
Yeah, Flash Forward absolutely.
Canceled. Not just because it's not a good show, but because it's got a lot going on behind the scenes that make it not worth picking up.
And over at NBC, Law and Order and Chuck are on the bubble. Chuck is always on the bubble. Chuck lives on the bubble.
Chuck will be picked up.
And but they've revamped the show so much. I almost feel like it's they've just changed the nature of the show so much to me. It just seems pointless. But Law and Order will definitely be back. And we know Parenthood is so. NBC is keeping everything. They're desperate. They have no hits. You look at these shows, and then you look at the shows they have on the air, which are 30 Rock, Community, Law and Order, SVU, Parks and Recreation. They have nothing in dramas or sitcoms that are, you know, commercially big hits. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but The Office and 30 Rock are very modest hits by almost anything. They have nothing. Law & Order is like top 20. They have no shows.
I can't believe they would cancel Law & Order after like
umpteen
years.
No, they're not.
Years.
It just was a – they shoved
well,
it around.
Well, they may not have a choice. Isn't Law & Order the one that they need to have TBS's – okay, that they will help finance a final season or something. I wish I knew the exact details, but it might not be in their hands whether it's actually.
Yeah, it'll be back one more year.
It's a financial thing, yeah.
But I mean, they have nothing, no hits. It's unbelievable. CBS is in such better shape. Oh,
God. As soon as the Comcast NBC thing goes through, bye bye, Jeff Zucker.
Yeah.
Hey, mark my words. All right. And that on that note, I will close on TV. Thank you very much for indulging me.
You're welcome.
Watch Archer on Hulu.
Oh, okay then.
It's a good show. It's a good show.
Archer is hilarious.
Well, since we talked about Joss Whedon just a few minutes ago, we should probably move on to Big Deal or Big Whoop, our weekly segment where we discuss the top entertainment news stories and whether they're worth discussing or not. And I screwed up that little intro, but still, We'll talk about Joss Whedon first. Marvel superheroes will be answering to TV's Joss Whedon in the film franchise The Avengers. The creator of Buffy the Vampire Slayer is going to direct one of the biggest movie franchises of all time. If it comes together, the film will star Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, Chris Evans as Captain America, Chris Hemsworth, that's a mouthful, Chris Hemsworth as Thor.
You bet he is.
Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury. And maybe even Edward Norton will return as the Hulk. Karen, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
This is such a gigantic deal. Joss Whedon is such a geek, and for him to be, and I mean that in the best way possible, for him to be directing this movie is just, I would think it would be just a comic boy's, you know, wet dream.
What about you, Michael?
It's a big deal, and they're clearly trying to pull a J.J. Abrams. He did a perfect reboot of Star Trek, and they're hoping Joss Whedon will do the same with The Avengers. Though, mind you, he doesn't have the track record J.J. Abrams does on movies or TV. So it'll be fascinating to see, but I love him, so it'll be great.
Moving on, Kevin Eubanks is leaving Jay Leno and The Tonight Show. After 18 years as the amiable bandleader and sideman, he will be saying goodbye right at the end of Sweeps on May 28th. Michael, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
It's a big whoop. It's not going to hurt the show or affect the show. And it's fascinating, the timing, but it's interesting.
Karen?
I agree. It's a big whoop, but I do find the timing really rather interesting.
I kind of liked what he said. He said, after 18 years of playing America into commercials, I'm going to go somewhere where I can finish a song.
Yeah.
Kind of funny.
That's funnier than anything he said in the entire 18 years.
Our next story is about Martin Scorsese, who is going 3D, and not for a gangster film, sadly. Scorsese is directing the film version of the award-winning children's book, The Invention of Hugo Cabret, about a young boy who finds a broken robot in Paris during the 1930s. Karen, is Scorsese going 3D a big deal or a big whoop?
This is a big deal, and I feel like Scorsese has, like, personally let me down.
Michael?
I say it's a big whoop because it's not a gangster film or a drama. If it was, then it would be interesting. But a franchisee-type kids movie, that's standard issue, so it's just a
big
whoop.
It's the fact that a director like Scorsese is doing a 3D movie, to me, is the big deal.
I agree, but it's not a groundbreaking push into drama or gangster or some other area. It's just the typical thing that gets done in 3D, a summer blockbuster.
It looked like he was actually going to shoot me.
You talking to me? No, I mean you in the first row right there. The one with the red shirt.
He's pointing at me. Move on.
Our next story is about Comedy Central. They have locked Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert into new contracts. Stewart is signed through June 2013. Colbert is signed through December 2012. And of course, Jon Stewart is the host of The Daily Show and Stephen Colbert is the host of The Colbert Report.
Michael, for those of you who are living in space.
Michael, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
It's a big duh. Of course they've re-signed them. However, the length of their contract is bizarre. Only 3 years for Stewart and two and a half years for Colbert. They should be through the political season. Stewart should be signed through January of 2015, so that you get him through the November elections. It makes
absolutely
no sense.
Yeah, it's called having a good agent. How much money those guys are going to get?
Yeah, exactly. He's going to be in the driver's seat. Bad move on Comedy Central's part.
Karen?
It's a big deal only for that part we just talked about. Otherwise, yeah, it's a big duh.
All right, then moving on to Tomorrow, which is supposed to never die for James Bond, but apparently it will die. The producers of the franchise, Michael G. Wilson and Barbara Broccoli, just announced that because of MGM's uncertain future, they have suspended development of Bond 23 indefinitely. Karen, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
It's a big deal. It's not only just for Bond, but also for MGM and its future.
Michael?
Goldfinger. Oh, I'm sorry. It is a big deal, especially since it's the biggest Bond ever, the last one, and to have an interruption in the franchise at this point where they're bigger than ever is really, really bad.
Sam Mendes must be so pissed.
Yeah, yes. He was working on the film, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was reworking the script, I believe.
If we're lucky, it means he'll fall out because he's a terrible choice.
Oh, he's such a bad director.
Our next story is about Netflix, which is starting to offer closed captioning on some of their instant streaming titles, but only on the PC and Mac. Subtitles, of course, have always been available on foreign films that included them, But closed captioning, the service for the deaf and hard of hearing, and people who can hear but have absolutely no idea what the gangsters on the wire were saying to each other just then.
That's why I used to listen
That's
to
why it. I use it all the time.
Well, that hasn't been an option on those shows. Now on select titles, like Lost, it is, and more will be coming. Michael, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
In sign language, I am now saying this is a big deal.
Karen, in sign language, what do you think?
Thumbs down. Big whoop. Who cares? I mean, deaf, nice. It's great, but I mean, yeah. Otherwise, oh my god, just made myself. I just really told people what a horrible person I am.
That's right. Well, so many things are being available streaming now via Hulu and other things. They've got to get on board and start offering it to closed captioning.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is they had to do this. Otherwise, the ADA would have been breathing down their neck. What I really liked was that they are going to include support for 5.1 surround sound in the future.
Cool.
Our next story is about Criterion, which is coming to Hulu. The DVD company, acclaimed for its loving presentations of classic films, is now streaming movies on Hulu. The first titles are Roman Polanski's Knife in the Water and a clutch of fun samurai films about Zatoichi, the blind swordsman. Michael, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
I think it's a big deal. I know every media company already puts stuff on Hulu, but it just really surprised me. And I thought, they're extending their brand, or are they going to make money off this, or why are they? I found it really kind of mind-blowing that they were doing it.
Karen?
Zatoichi, the blind swordsman? Who cares?
Zatoichi.
Who cares?
I believe Knife in the Water, the Polanski film, was their first DVD release. I could be wrong about that. Or maybe it was their first Laserdisc release. I don't know.
Just the idea that a small little art house label like this could want to leverage its name and say they've got to have a presence on Hulu or they're going to miss out. I find that really interesting.
Miss out? They're lucky people are even watching. They're trying desperately to find some place that will distribute their stuff.
No. Criterion is a wonderfully successful company. It's been around for decades. Everybody loves them.
Our next story comes from patently Apple, who has discovered that the computer company and phone company and, well, everybody knows who Apple is, they want to sell you concert tickets. Apple just filed a patent for a new ticket selling system that might mean you'll have your concert tickets stored electronically on your iPhone. Michael, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
It's a big whoop. Of course they want to be in the concert ticket business, but it's not going to be easy.
Karen?
This would have been a big deal 5 years ago. This year, no one cares.
I just hope they lower the service charges.
Yeah, I know, right? That'd be the biggest deal.
Our next story is about Glee, which hit a ratings high last week. The return of Glee reached 13.6 million viewers, about double the 6 to 7 million viewers it averaged the first half of the season. Karen, is this a big deal or a big whoop?
I guess, it's a big deal. It's a big deal for a show on Fox, and 13.6 million viewers is a lot of viewers for network television.
Michael?
It's a big deal. I mean, this had to happen. It should have happened because they've had such a steamroll of publicity. They were all on Oprah. They're on the cover of Rolling Stone and TV Guide. The people are watching the DVDs. They're watching it streaming online. If they didn't have a big jump, you really would have felt like the show had missed its, moment to grow an audience. So it's a big deal.
That brings us to our next segment, Inside Baseball, where we discuss the stories that only people in Hollywood might care about. However, this week, you will definitely care about this story. It's two stories, really, and they kind of are combined. The first is from Greg Sandoval over at CNET, and apparently he uncovered, well, he didn't really uncover, because the Electronic Frontier Foundation, or the Government Accounting Office,
the GAO,
issued the results of its year-long study on the MPAA report that was released, I think, in 2006. Researchers there found that many of the claims copyright owners have made about piracy's effects on their businesses were based on unreliable research. The findings sent shockwaves through the tech and media circles and may have damaged the credibility of the MPAA, the Motion Picture Association of America, the trade group of the six largest film studios, as well as other copyright owners. And what they are referring to is the RIAA, which is the Recording Industry Association of America. And, basically what they're saying, the GAO is saying is, look, you guys released these reports and you had all these statistics and figures that said you lost $6.1 billion in the film industry to piracy, but you don't have any evidence of where you collected that data from. And we've asked you several times for it. We've tried to work with you, but you never present it. You're making these numbers up.
Well, the main thing is that the studios have to make the numbers up. It's very hard to prove, except for actual seizement of shipments of of, you know, fake DVDs, it's really hard to prove how much money, like if a college kid downloads a movie, does that mean he would have bought it otherwise or gone to the movie theater? You know, it's really hard to determine. And the MPAA pretends that it's not and that they know, and they just throw numbers out there. And I hope it does damage our credibility, because piracy is a problem, but you shouldn't just throw numbers around and pretend you know exactly what's going on when you don't. And they totally stonewalled the government. And they lie about it. If you link to this article, you read it, and the MPAA is like, yes, we cooperated with them fully. And the GAO says, no, you didn't. You didn't cooperate at all.
Yeah, I think that the MPAA kind of forgot who they were dealing with. This is the government. This is not like some reporter calling up for a quote about why something was rated NC-17. This is the federal government, and they will actually
ding
you.
Who's trying to help you.
Yes, exactly. In fact, you're turning to them for as much help as you can possibly get. Our next story, actually, which ties to this.
Can we just backtrack just for 1 second?
Sure.
Can we just laugh for a second that it sent shockwaves to the tech and media circles? I mean, did any of us really believe those numbers that the MPAA threw out in, what was it, 2005? Did any of us really believe that?
Well, it's nice that the government said they were making it up and bullshit.
No, definitely. Definitely. I just thought it was funny. They sent, you know, shockwaves. Yeah. Shockwaves? What are you talking about? I think most people always knew that the MPAA was kind of fudging their numbers. There was never any way to be able to place actual – what you just said, to place actual numbers on this, because especially since, like, studies have shown that most people who download, you know, material illegally do so because they had no intentions of ever going to the movie theater to see it anyway.
Or the opposite. They consume a ton. Everybody I know has bootleg CDs, buys every album that's legally available. You know, it works both ways. The fanboys who download an early version of Wolverine are absolutely going to be there opening weekend, you know?
Yeah, it seemed to me, even when those numbers first came out, that it was baffling to me as to where they got them. And they never, even at that time, would give even a clue as to where they came from. Anybody who has half a brain should have known that that was very suspicious.
Well, I believe those numbers, and my world was rocked.
And what will happen to your world in the future?
Well, in the future, according to the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is why I mentioned them earlier, the entertainment industry would like to place little pieces of software on your computers that will, and they say they want to do this voluntarily. These are anti-infringement pieces of software that will search regularly all of the files on your computer and try to find the ones that might infringe on intellectual property. They want widespread filters installed on all networks that would deter intellectual property infringement, meaning BitTorrent in this case.
And fair use. You know, they think anything that's bigger than a bread box is going to be stealing. And so they block, you know, fair use downloading of stuff, too. It's really annoying.
So the MPAA and the RIAA have asked IPEC, the Intellectual Property Enforcement Coordinator, to crack down on digital piracy. And they'd like guards stationed on our international borders with the express purpose of searching your personal media players for anything that would constitute copyright infringement.
Yeah, they want Homeland Security to be like, whoa, whoa, hang on,
yeah,
you know.
They're not busy
terrorist
enough.
Over here, but this person might be even more dangerous. You know, he's got a bootleg copy of, you know, Wolverine.
And how are they going to go to your iPod and know what's legal and not legal? It's so ridiculous. And they literally are asking for this. It's insane. Can you imagine the line if they're going to go through your laptop computer and go, that's just my porn, please don't look at it. You know, it's just like... People would, you know, imagine them go through your computer and look at your digital files. Oh my God, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and to place basically the equivalent of an electronic ankle bracelet
on your
computer.
And they want you to do that voluntarily, but they're just in a fantasy world of, you know, 1984. It's ridiculous.
That'll never happen.
I've said ridiculous 3 times. Let me see something else. It's absurd.
I mean, God knows what else that's going to do to my computer. No way in hell would I do that.
Absolutely not.
Well, there are some out there who believe that this is just kind of a ruse, that they wanted to submit these requests in March to kind of show how bad it could really be, so that when the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement, the ACTA treaty, which has basically been negotiated in secret by dozens and dozens of countries... that when that comes out and is incredibly restrictive, that people say, well, you know, it's not as restrictive as what the MPAA and RIAA want.
You know, you're right, but that's that sort of bargaining tactic always annoys me. They say do some extreme thing, and then when you get what you want, it's somewhere. It's like no, it's like the MPA before. You don't release a figure of $6 billion when you have no way to back it up. You lose good faith. People don't take you seriously, and when they do stuff like this, you just say they're a joke. I don't want them to have any power at all to suggest anything.
Sperling, did you hear Molly Wood on Buzz Out Loud talking about this and totally lose it and use the F word?
Yes.
That was so awesome.
She was so embarrassed by that. It was so funny.
It took her like a half hour to get like to come back from that one.
Buzz Out Loud, for those of you who don't know, is a podcast on CNET and a worthy one. It's all about the day's tech news. So check it out. And thank you for checking out this podcast. Links to all of the stories we discussed, including links to Todd Martin's work and Lauren Bradshaw's work, will be in our show notes, the show notes for episode 50, which can be found on our website, showbizsandbox.com. Our website is where you'll also find links to all of our social networking accounts, including Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, you name it. Our website is also where you can find ways to contact us. Email is a good way to contact us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can call us and leave us a voicemail as well. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's toll-free, 888-567-7263. The music that you hear at the beginning and end of each episode is by the popular indie rock group who does not sing their hit song during their concerts, especially if they're playing Coachella, MGMT. However, we will play their Electric Feel, their rendition of their hit song Electric Feel from Coachella, which I recorded on my flip camera phone. So that will take us
just,
out.
Are you just desperate to break the rules in every possible way?
What do you mean?
A bootleg version of a song from a film festival?
No, from a music
from
festival.
A music festival.
Hey, hang on. I just have to call the FBI. Just give me a
Yeah, the EFF just called.
You know what? There were so many people there with those flip cameras. Good luck trying to catch us. That's all I can say. And besides, you know what? I paid my dues. My arm was in the air for 5.5 minutes while everybody was dancing around and pushing me. So, you know what? Enjoy the music. Plus, we won't play the whole thing. Anyway, you can find MGMT on MySpace, myspace.com/MGMT. Their new album is out. It's named Congratulations. Go check it out. You can also find their work on whoismgmt.com. You can find Michael Giltz's work on his website, michaelgiltz.com, or you can follow him on Twitter. Michael Giltz is the username to look up. You can follow Karen Woodward on Twitter. I just like to leave that space there. Give people hope that they can, you know, follow. Stalk you. Yeah.
Yeah, please do on Foursquare.
Yeah. @Karen_Woodward is the username to look up on Twitter for Karen, and her website can be found at KarenWoodwardOnline.com. Some of my writing can be found on CelluloidJunkie.com, or you can follow me on Twitter. @Sperling is the username to look up. You can follow the show on Twitter. @ShowbizSandbox is the username to look up. Until next week, play nice.